There's an obscure writer obstructing science. That's according to Dr. Lisa Campo Engelstein in the March 2011 issue of the American Journal of Bioethics. The obscure writer involves parthenotes in the Dickey Wicker Amendment. Dr. Campo Engelstein and colleagues co-authored the article in AJOB. She's with the Oncofertility Consortium, Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University, and she joins us now on the Bioethics Channel. Lisa, nearly everyone from scientist to person on the street has heard of embryonic stem cell research, but fewer have heard of parthenotes and parthenogenesis. Explain what that is and how they differ scientifically from embryos.
Sure, and first off, just thanks for having us here. Parthenotes come from the term parthenogenesis, which originates from the Greek meaning virgin birth. And parthenotes are a non-sexual form of reproduction. So the organism doesn't need to engage in sexual activity with another to reproduce this way. And parthenogenesis is actually quite common among certain species such as ants and bees and flies. Parthenogenesis is when an egg becomes activated to begin dividing and developing as if it were an embryo. However, no fertilization has taken place. So the resulting organism from this this process is called a parthenote. And so since fertilization doesn't take place, there is no genetic contribution from a sperm. So all the genetic material is just from the egg itself. And so that's one very important difference between a parthenote and an embryo. An embryo contains genetic material from two different cells, from a sperm and an egg, whereas a parthenote just has genetic material from the egg. Parthenotes don't undergo fertilization, as I mentioned. And very importantly for this discussion, human parthenotes or mammalian parthenotes cannot move beyond the early stages of development, whereas human embryos obviously can develop into a live birth baby. Parthenotes in mammals die off after only a few days.
So it seemed like this would be a way to bypass some of the ethical concerns of embryonic research, but parthenotes are caught in the tangle of politics, and in particular something called the Dickey-Wicker Amendment, correct?
Yes, and many people have never even heard of the Dickey-Wicker Amendment, and this is partly why we wanted to write this article, is to bring attention to this to others outside of reproductive biology, those working in the trenches there. And this bill was passed in 1996 as part of the appropriations bill for the Departments of Labor, Health, and Human Services. And it's a rider, so that means that it's not voted on separately. It's voted as part of the larger bill. And this bill, this amendment here, not only prohibits research money, federal money going to research embryos, but also parthenotes. And that's what we thought was sort of interesting, because President Clinton had already explicitly restricted federal funds from going to research using embryos created for research. But this bill took it a step further and said, we're going to ban federal funding for research using spare embryos and parthenotes.
So while parthenotes are considered ethically acceptable by some, as I understand it, there are still some ethical concerns with parthenotes, correct?
Yes, there are. And actually, in 1994, the NIH created a panel called the Human Embryo Research Panel, and they laid out the differences between embryos and parthenotes and made their recommendations. And so the Dickey-Wicker Amendment was somewhat based on that. However, the Dickey-Wicker Amendment conflated embryos and parthenotes and made them seem as if they were ethically equivalent. However, as we mentioned, they're very different than embryos, but there are some ethical concerns. Some are worried because we don't really know what their ethical status is. They're somewhat ambiguous, especially given that parthenogenesis is a reproductive strategy for other animals. So would we say that a parthenote from a bee has more moral status than a parthenote from a human, whereas since the human parthenote can't develop past a certain point, whereas a bee parthenote can develop into a live bee. So some are concerned, how do we understand this? There's also been the concern, and this is somewhat a little sci-fi, you see this in some of the sci-fi literature, is that this fear that men will no longer be needed for reproduction or in society more generally because women will be able to produce through parthenogenesis.
Have the research possibilities of parthenodes been lost, too, in the discussion of other ways to bypass the ethical issues of stem cell research? I'm thinking about things like induced pluripotent stem cells, as an example.
Sure. Obviously, parthenodes have not gotten nearly as much attention, and most people, as you mentioned earlier, have never heard of them. But people have heard of iPS cells. And iPS cells do sidestep many of the controversies and concerns raised by embryo research. However, iPS cells can't be used for everything. And one thing they cannot be used for is research involving egg activation. And a lot of the work that the Oncofertility Consortium does revolves around egg activation. The consortium is working on finding fertility preservation options for cancer patients. One option that they are currently working on is taking immature egg follicles and maturing them in vitro to mature eggs that then can be fertilized. This sort of research can't be done on iPS cells. We need to do this on either embryos or parthenotes. That way we can study egg activation to understand these reproductive technologies.
What type of research in particular can make special use of parthenotes?
Sure. As I just mentioned, research involving reproductive health matters, so assisted reproductive technologies are one, including, so many of these technologies, such as IVF, they have low success rates, at least in part because they have trouble fertilizing the egg in vitro. And if we better understood egg activation, we might have more success with in vitro fertilization. Also, in the reproductive realm, we believe that a significant number of miscarriages in humans are due to non-viable parthenotes, could be the early loss of non-viable parthenotes. And so if we better understood egg activation as well there using parthenotes, that would help us give us insight into the causes of miscarriage. Outside of the reproductive realm, it would help us better understand cancers. Parthenotes can lead to tumors in humans, and it's actually the most common form of pediatric ovarian cancer is caused by parthenotes, which I was surprised to learn myself. So this sort of research could help us understand these ovarian tumors. And then lastly, the research that can be done can be using parthenotes to create stem cells. And these would sidestep the ethical concerns of creating stem cells using embryos. So there's quite a few things that can be done, types of research that can be achieved through parthenotes.
In your article in the March 2011 issue of AJOB, you call for a public discussion on reconsidering the Dickey-Wicker Amendment, starting with the removal of parthenogenesis from the prohibition of NIH funding. Please explain.
Sure. So I'm speaking for my co-authors and I, would like to see the Dickey-Wicker Amendment removed completely. And the, as I had mentioned earlier, the Human Embryo Research Panel described various ways that you can conduct embryo and parthenote research ethically. And we think that following those guidelines would allow for this ethical research to continue and really benefit science and the public more generally. What we were trying to do in this paper is to kind of highlight how public policy is not always grounded in good science. And the Dickey-Wicker Amendment conflates embryos and parthenotes when there are important scientific and hence ethical differences between the two. So we wanted to bring this to the public's attention and hopefully initiate a discussion here where we can say, okay, well, maybe the Dickey-Wicker Amendment won't be repealed tomorrow. However, in the meantime, we can try to achieve something smaller. Maybe we can try to have parthenotes removed from the ban altogether.
The article is entitled An Obscure Rider Obstructing Science, The Conflation of Parthenotes with Embryos in the Dickey-Wicker Amendment, co-authored by Lisa Campo Engelstein. at the Oncofertility Consortium Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University. It can be found in the March 2011 edition of the American Journal of Bioethics. For more information, visit bioethics.net. That's bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.